Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We got a nice episode for you today, a short for the offseason called The Death of Base Defense. And we want to talk a little bit about the shift away from base defense the Ravens have been experiencing really over the last 25 years. And we're going to give you four different points looking at that. Joining me for this discussion is Andrew Gansis. Andrew, how are you doing?
Doing well, Ken. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Always a pleasure. Andrew, one of the most prepared people you'll ever record with. So if you're out there and you have your own podcast, I'd recommend getting Andrew on because he always brings very detailed notes to the process, way more than I expect out of anyone who does this, by the way. But thank you, Andrew, for being so prepared for this kind of thing. And it's come up more recently because of a specific element of the Ravens defense, specifically the prevalence of big nickel. But this has been something that's been going on now and evolving over the last 25 years for the Ravens in terms of a move away from base defense.
Absolutely. I think in terms of the modern system, you're seeing it more so now with Kyle Hamilton being emphasized as a big nickel, and more so systems across the NFL are taking it over. You're seeing it in Seattle with Eamon Wari and Derwin James playing that big nickel role in with the Chargers. And it's interesting to see how the system is being utilized and implemented over the league, given that the offenses have shifted more towards 11 personnel being more spread in nature. I'll let you kind of transition through how the Ravens have gotten to that point.
Sure. Let's talk about it with some historical context, because obviously some of it is player related. And Kyle Hamilton has brought enormous changes to the way the Ravens line up on defense. And there are a couple losers with the Kyle Hamilton being at slot corner. One is other potential slot corners, which means other shorter slot corners that happen to be on the Ravens oftentimes are losers at this. And I wonder how much of a role, say, a Chandler Rivers can have within this defense, given he's kind of limited probably in his ability to play on the outside. We may find out that's not true, by the way. I'd love for that not to be the case, but Rivers is not a particularly tall guy, and it does limit, you know, how he can probably contribute to the Ravens defense. But that's one group that's limited. The weak side linebacker can no longer be a three down linebacker because Hamilton takes his spot in the dime defense. So there are a few trickle down snaps from the about 25 or 30% snaps that trickle down from that slot corner position to that slot corner position when he's in dime. And then the other position that I don't think people really realize is the Ravens don't play the base defense very much anymore either, which really means the five tech has more or less died for the Ravens. So the Ravens, they look for nose tackles. They certainly had plenty of them last year, and they look for three techs.
For sure. We've kind of seen the five tech position either shift inside to a three tech position or more of a wide nine position for the Ravens. The five techs originally were made to take on double teams and control two gaps. We've seen the league transition towards more of getting more of an athletic three tech to control for the B gap. And now you've seen that represented in terms of how the Ravens personnel has kind of developed over the years with transitioning more towards a space eater and interior defensive lineman like Arthur Jones, Chris Canny, Lawrence Guy, to more of the athletic three tech position like Nnamdi Matabike and Travis Jones over the years.
One friend of the show that is kind of a loser in this from the standpoint is Brent Urban, who was a terrific five tech, a guy with length and great size, managing characteristics as a five tech. But there just isn't really a spot for him. They'll bring him back, and I suspect he's on their speed dial again this year, but he'll be a guy who, if he comes in, he'll really be playing almost exclusively three and then a few other snaps where the Ravens are still in third and short kind of thing, or maybe when the other team is protecting a lead late and trying to run the ball. It really limits the impact of a player like Urban.
For sure. And fortunately, we were able to sign probably the best five tech in the league, Calais Campbell, being 40 years old. So his positional versatility across the defensive line is going to serve us very well for this upcoming season.
Does that scare you at all? by the way, that a 40-year-old's versatility is like a linchpin to the Ravens defense?
I think he's the ageless wonder at this point, and I wish him the best. But obviously looking forward to see what he has to bring. I kind of wanted to bring up your point of the slot corners taking less snaps as well. Chandler Rivers, I was kind of looking through Tavon Young's career with Baltimore and kind of looking through the similarities between them and how they were represented. I'm interested to see what your thoughts were between them, but Tavon Young in that slot corner role, it ended up playing really well on the outside for the Ravens back in 2019 and 2020, 2021 area around that time. And I was just curious to see about your thoughts on like Keon Martin. And
I'm legitimately having to think back and remember if I can ever remember Tavon playing on the outside. He'd certainly played a lot of slot for the Ravens. I'd have to go back and look at that. I mean, he had troubles with injuries while he was here, obviously, and that was a big problem that slowed him down with the Ravens. But I remember him as a slot, and if he did play a little bit on the outside, it would have been an emergency basis kind of thing. And they certainly had those kind of things come up. So I don't want to tell you that's not the way I remember it, but it's not it isn't the way I remember it. I don't really remember him playing on the outside very much. And I certainly could be wrong about that. I'd have to look back to be sure.
Yeah. I was going through a loophole yesterday. I thought he passed away, and I got confused between the gentleman. I think it was Telvin that passed away, number 43, that passed away in a tragic biking accident, maybe 5 or so years ago. So Tavon Young is alive and well. But there was a Ravens defensive back that passed away a few years ago, but
I gotta say, I don't remember him. Telvin Young. He was a 90-man roster guy, I would guess, who didn't make it.
I'm gonna do a quick Google search.
All right. Why are you doing that? Let me kind of set this up from a historical perspective. If you don't mind, mute yourself while you're typing, and I'll go through this. But want to go back 20 years. And on this show, you've heard me refer to these various Ravens teams, but I thought it's really worth tying together in a single episode. But we're gonna give you four kind of significant data points. I could have done more than this. I could have added 2006, for example, which would have been a Rex Ryan unit. That probably would have been a good idea. But Marvin Lewis was the coach in 2000. Dean Pease in 2012, who was very much at the other end of the spectrum. And we'll talk a little bit about that from Lewis. Then Wink Martindale, who had his own very special characteristics, a super aggressive coach, second only to Ryan, really, in aggressiveness in terms of getting after the passer. And then Zach Orr in 2025. And each of those represented kind of a different data point, a different ability to work with the players they had. One of the things that I think has been forgotten about Marvin Lewis, for example, is just how absolutely stunningly good he was dealing with adverse circumstances and the personnel he had. And he could make a defense out of what he had, even though he was dealing with limited ingredients a lot of times, particularly in the early Ravens years between 96 and 99 and 96, 98, they were really not very good at all defensively. 99, they became good defensively. And that was kind of the backbone of the 2000 team. And then he was there through 2001. A lot of people remember he was, you know, they wanted him to be a head coach. They made a video for him and all those kinds of things. And I want to go over the numbers from these 4 years, but maybe if I just want to let you jump in here and talk about Marvin Lewis or what you remember about him.
I'm going to be honest. I was born in 1998. So right. My understanding of the Ravens defenses back in the day, big physical edges like Bull Ware and McCrary, they used a lot of base, and personnel was just a lot different up front. I'm sure you have a lot more understanding of the early 2000s nature of the Ravens in terms of personnel and how things kind of anchored around that moving forward. But I have more to speak on, definitely from Wink on, but all right. interested to see what you have here.
All right, let's kind of go through this, and then we'll see how much this has changed over the course of 25 years. I have numbers that will kind of help us get a picture of it. So what I did is I didn't try, because the Ravens played a 4-3 defense in 2000, and the rest of their history, basically, they did in 2001 as well, and they did earlier briefly, but they really haven't played a 4-3 since 2001. So what, you know, what we have is a look at different, you know, odd and even fronts over those periods, where the really the thing we're trying to look at is the number of defensive backs on the field when we're talking about the death of base versus the death of nickel in a lot of ways, because base meant something different in between a, you know, a, if you want to call it a 4-3 and a 5-2 defense, or a 4-3 and a 3-4 defense is the common, you know, parlance is. So Marvin Lewis in 2000 with 0-3 DBs on the field had 3.6% of the snaps with that. So it's probably some heavy snaps. I didn't look into individually where those snaps were or anything, but that number has not changed too much over the years. Dean Pease had 29 snaps, 3.2%. I'm just going to give you percentages from here on out. Wink Martindale had 1% of such snaps in 2019, and Zach Gore had 2.2% of such snaps in 2025. So it's not terribly material, because the difference between the fewest and the most is only 24 snaps. So it's not where the big differences are. Now we get into base. There are some whopping differences in four defensive back units. Now, a lot of you heard me say, talk about the prevalence of 6 and 7 DB units for the 2000 team. That's true, but that team also played 48% base defense so they had four defensive backs on the field. In fact, what they didn't play a lot of was nickel. It's really strange, because they went from 4 to 6 or 7 and then back to 4 again. And it was very unusual for a defense to do that. But that was how Marvin Lewis felt you could best get it done. Dean Pease in 2012 played 56.5% base. I'm sorry, that can't be right. I'm going to have to take a moment here to fix these numbers so I go this, but they add up to 118% here. So I've got an error here, but this is, I know I just got these numbers right out of the spreadsheet, so they're right. I've just got to get the correct ones down.
While you're toggling on that, the defensive back that passed away that I brought up earlier was Trey Walker, number 43 for Baltimore. I mixed him and Tavon Young up.
Okay. Got it fixed. All right. So Dean Pease in 2012 had 47.9% base. So it basically had not dropped much since 2000. Now, those teams were drastically different, because Lewis played a lot of diamond quarter and Dean Pease hated playing diamond quarter. In fact, I've often assimilated Dean Pease and how he looked at football as he really didn't want to be caught with his pants down on first down with a large number of defensive backs after a team was able to, get a first down on third down. So even on third down, he didn't really make defensive changes to really adjust for that much. Wink Martindale in 2019, this is where it gets very stark, 9.1% base defense. 9.1. That's 83 total snaps of base defense they played the entire season, compared to 516 in 2012. The 2012, all of these numbers, by the way, I only did the regular season. I just wanted to have some numbers that were more comparable. In point of fact, that 2019 team played only 57 defensive snaps per game, while the 2012 team played 67.3. So, you know, the 2012 team, honestly, was not that good. Not that good relative to the other early Raven, the early Harbaugh years. All four of the other teams were better. The 2012 team happened to their 12th in DVOA, and they happened to get hot at the right time, which is fantastic for us, but also kind of a tale about how it's important to get into the tournament and then try and win there. Nobody gave them a chance going into that. And frankly, in 2000, they didn't give them a chance either. They went on the road as 6-point dogs twice. And in 2012, they went on the road to Denver as a 9-point dog and to New England as a 7.5-point dog. But I've said that about Pease, and I'll talk a little bit more when we get into the dime stuff and the nickel stuff a little bit later. But Pease definitely did not like playing a 6 defensive back, did not like replacing a linebacker. Some of it was personnel related, because he had Zach Orr. And so Zach Orr and Mosley were two pretty good coverage linebackers. Didn't feel like he needed to take them off. I asked him a question at the podium one time in about 2015 or so, and he said, you know, I don't have a reason to take one of these guys off. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, you saw our secondary last year. Who was I supposed to put in instead, kind of thing. So he really didn't like the question either, but that was an interesting thing. And so we 9% we're down to with Wink in 2019. And then Zach Gore last year, we're back to 9.6%. So that is a largely a function, I believe, of Hamilton being here since for the most recent team. The 2019 team is largely a matter of game script. They were ahead and they were dominating so many games. They said, tell you what, we'll put nickel or dime on the field. In fact, they put dime on the field a ton. And you guys can take your best shot. If you want to run the clock out on yourselves, you go ahead. But they led a lot of games big that year. So they had the luxury of game script. And in particular, I look at that Rams game. They played almost exclusively race car at the end of the game. That's the four outside linebacker, heavy pass rush package that Pease installed for the first time in 2018. But in 19, they played it 13.2% of the time, and only 9.1% of the time did they play base. So almost 50% more race car than base.
Thanks for that great recap, Ken. Kind of going back from my childhood perspectives, looking at the 2011 and 2012 defenses, I remember Lardarius Webb had a significant injury that impacted them. Suggs was coming off an Achilles. In that Broncos game, I believe Corey Graham had a pick six and another interception on top of that. Kerry Williams played pretty well. And then we go into Pease then using Mosley and Orr as more coverage linebackers. Now transitioning into more of like what Orr and McDonald had built after Wink. I know you kind of briefly mentioned that Rowe's been decent in coverage, but he's been placed in a lot more coverage demand situations that are less advantageous for him because of Big Nickel.
I think it's really because of the weakness of in coverage the other player next to him. So whether that was Simpson or Buchanan, at times, I think it's really that when he's in dime, he's very free to do different things. Honestly, Roquan had a pretty good year last year. I know he wasn't all pro, but he really had a pretty good year last year, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. That interception versus Minnesota should have counted. So in 2018, Wink transitioned most of his offense to most of his defense to match the 11 personnel back in 2019, as you kind of mentioned, primarily because they had a lot of big leads. They utilized Chuck Clark a lot near the line of scrimmage, which covered up tight ends and used to disguise blitzes. I know Wink was really popularized for his cover zero blitz, just to try to stay ahead of a step ahead of 11 personnel. And they used a lot of three safety looks to manipulate the box and simulate pressures. As one of the kind of trade-offs you get with nickel and dime is that oftentimes you get a weaker run defense depending on your linebacker and defensive back personnel. But with Kyle Hamilton and Roquan, two of the best horizontal defenders in the league, that basically canceled each other out.
I'm in complete agreement on that, by the way, Andrew, that Hamilton is the reason they're able to not play base today. And yeah, the 2025 team had none of the advantages of game script that the 2019 team has. They trailed a bunch of games. I mean, they just weren't all that good. The offense had a bad year, and they played almost 67 defensive snaps per game, 66.9. They're outsnapped by their opponents, which is very un-Ravens like in the Jackson era to be, you know, badly outsnapped. And you know, just even without that, they're still able to stay under 10% base because Hamilton and Big Nickel is a great substitute for the base defense.
Absolutely. He's a positionless weapon, and I'm excited to see what Minter has in store for him for this upcoming season. I just finished the expectation series on him. I'm so excited for what Kyle's future holds in Baltimore. Really looking forward to that. I'm interested to see where you think the personnel groupings would shift if Hamilton were to go down. I know we have significant safety depth around Hamilton. This is probably his best safety room around him since he's been in Baltimore with Hawkins and Starks and Kayvon Wallace as an insurance policy. Do you think the Ravens would shift out of having a higher big nickel personnel in the absence of Hamilton, or?
Okay, so let's look at that from both angles. So first is if somebody else gets hurt, not mm-hmm. Hamilton, but one of the other safeties gets hurt. The Ravens are well prepared this year to keep Hamilton at slot corner under those circumstances. And the Kayvon Wallace move in particular was a move in that direction. Also, I mean, just the fact that they picked up a free safety in Hawkins as opposed to another strong safety, which they could have done. It was a very strong move to solidify other back ends that could complement what Hamilton brings. So you don't want to take Hamilton off the line of scrimmage. And I know there are injury reasons why it might be a better place for him might be on the back end. But from an impact perspective, I don't think you can argue anymore that Hamilton on the back end is more valuable than on the front end. But then you bring up the other case, which is what happens if Hamilton gets hurt and how would they change? I think they'd just go to either Humphrey or perhaps Keon Martin as a slot corner. We would probably see a return to more base defense if Hamilton were out. I don't think they'd remain a big nickel team exclusively. I think we'd see more. But that's one thing where I have to say I'm unsure how Minter would solve that problem. He could be different than previous Ravens defensive coordinators. What we've seen, you know, when Minter has had the great big nickel safety, he's been very willing to utilize that instead of base. So I think, you know, I probably know 75%, or I probably think I know 75% of how Minter's defense is going to look. But I only know maybe 10% of what I expect from Declan Doyle, which is really the strange thing.
Yeah, as you kind of alluded to, hopefully there's a lot of Christmas presents that we open when the season starts on how things kind of pan out there. As we kind of talked about after McDonald or kind of implemented this more so dime personnel and use of this two high safety shell, as we kind of alluded to, the defense was on the field a lot last year. I remember getting gashed in the Detroit game for 290 plus yards. I believe Orr's scheme was set in the idea of a lot of with the two high safety shell was just a lot of damage control and to minimize getting burnt on the back end. But at that case, teams were able to hit us underneath with a lot of crossing routes and things that just gassed our defense and made them really tired. I also think that
this show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The vast differences between Orr and McDonald, aside from like relatively the personnel stayed quite the same, absence of Queen leaving and Matabike's injury, but McDonald's play calling is versus Orr's play calling and how things were timed up and sequenced appropriately just told the story of preparation and game management from that perspective.
It was a very injured team too, I'll add, in 25. I think, you know, Orr was given a very, very difficult task. And I'm not saying he passed the test, by the way. I'm not saying that. But he's given a very difficult task of dealing with the injuries. At first to Hamilton, to Humphrey, to Roquan. You know, and they had some players on the field, you know, some undrafted free agents, Ruben Lowry, you know, who's starting a football game for you. They weren't really prepared to deal with those, that set of injuries. And the guy, it was the big reason why they got off such a bad start this year. And then when you look at what they had, particularly after Matabike went down, you know, they had to shift to this four nose tackle, game day roster of defensive linemen. Now, fortunately, within that group, Travis Jones could play three tech and could play three tech extremely well. I don't think that'll be a problem at all. If they want to do it going forward, I'd be real excited about it happening. But it was not an ideal situation to work from if you're Zach Orr. And obviously, there were problems on the back end too. But the problems up front were where it really started for that Ravens team. And they finally put it together when they moved Kyle Hamilton up front, and now they've only got to play two of those defensive linemen per play most of the time.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that you kind of talked about with, I think it was the Matabike show. I mean, we definitely like to see a Travis Jones snap decrease for 2026. Mm-hmm. He played a lot. I mean, and then the revolving door practice squad elevations on the defensive line with Josh Tupou, et cetera, CJ Okoye.
Tate Bryan. Yeah.
Yeah. And he eventually ended up getting injured, I think, within the last 4 weeks of the season last year. So I think the one big thing, like the second game versus Cincinnati, I think Orr had a really good showing. We shut them out, and that was a really good stamp on the season for Zach Orr, I would say. It'll be interesting this year with a lot of the rotational and positions on defensive line and how versatile Minter is able to be with pass rush by committee with the powerful edge rushers and Zion Young and Robinson, and then more of the speed rushers and Green and Hendrickson, and alternating your interior guys with Campbell and Jones and hopefully Matabike. It's really setting up to be a really good system, and super excited for it for this upcoming year with Hamilton blitzing off the edge and that big nickel role.
They certainly have, I think, gotten themselves in a better position of depth such that they won't be going frantically, making frantic changes or going to the market or even the street to find players that they have in the past. So the first thing was to set themselves up so they could continue to play big nickel, and they can do that with, as long as Hamilton is not the one who's hurt. If Hamilton is the one who's hurt, it's kind of like losing Lamar Jackson on defense. Is you lose the kind of a lot of what makes your defense special, and then you've got to really make a big adjustment. In terms of what they did, though, on the edges, I think they got a lot more depth, and they got complementary depth where they've got good edge setters to go with, you know, guys who can rush the passer. They ought to be better about getting specialization of pass rushers this year, which I think is a real positive. And then on the interior, I think they're more lined up with guys who really fit the position they're at. And the big guy last year, I'm sorry to say, who just didn't really fit his position or as much as the Ravens would have hoped, would be Aeneas Peebles, who was, you know, one of the few smaller defensive linemen they had, potentially could have been a good penetrating three tech. The Ravens didn't have game script to allow him to be a closeout player, and they didn't really have the willingness to put him on the field against the run because he was really too small. And I think Rashawn Benny and him, it'd be interesting to see who wins the you know, what I think will be a very significant camp battle for the Ravens. And Rashawn Benny, I would think, does have the size. He looks like he's carrying more weight than he did at the combine or combine at pro day, wherever he weighed in. But he looks like he weighs, I would say, between, you know, 300 and 315 pounds right now, and not 295 or 299 or whatever he was where he was running.
For sure. Benny definitely intrigues me. I know you brought up a few statistics on the show with his stops to missed tackle ratio and ability to penetrate. And I think that's more versatile in Minter's defense than what Peebles can provide from a run stopping perspective. So I'm interested to see how that camp battle pans out moving forward.
Yeah. And you know, in truth, the three tech is not your most important position unless you've got Nnamdi Matabike. The three tech is not your most important position in terms of pass rushing downs. It's a guy who oftentimes you have a kick in player there from outside linebacker. And the Ravens have two good choices in Tavius Robinson and Zion Young to do that. So I do expect Benny will be primarily a run defense player, play primarily on early downs, and he could be very impactful there. And his size is a little bit less than the rest of the league, but I think his style really fits what'll help the Ravens get people on the ground and hopefully get penetration in the backfield. So you could do it. You kind of were mentioning it here. There's two ways your three tech can go at his job, go at his craft. He could be like Brent Urban and be more of a two gapping three tech when he's moved there. Urban basically came up as a five tech, but when he's played three, that's what he's looking to do. Is he's looking to two gap and he's looking to try and walk that player back a little bit. Uses length and leverage to get underneath the pads of that guy and back him up a little bit. Benny is a shed then chase player. A lot of people call him a penetrator. I like the term because I think it's more specific. He doesn't want to get tied up in a block at the line of scrimmage by the guy opposite. He wants to throw him away and get into the backfield. And the advantage you get there is you may get somebody who overruns a gap and leaves a gap uncovered. But you also have a good chance to bifurcate the backfield in a way that forces the running back into a dilemma. And when I say dilemma, I mean between two bad choices. There's no good choices involved. So I like that, too, as a way to try and play defense. I think you can do it either way, and each has advantages. And hopefully Benny is a guy who gets back there. He makes some plays himself because he's done that in his time at Michigan, and also creates real problems for running backs moving other than north in terms of their direction.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, doing the draft show and everything with you, one of the guys I really wanted was Grayson Hall with his pass rush versatility. I feel like he was pretty similar to Benny in that notion of being more of a shed and chase guy. I mean, they're pretty similar in stature. I'm happy you were able to get Benny later with his draft slide. And Benny's notion to stop the run has me intrigued as a prospect moving forward, as we've kind of needed more depth at the interior defensive line position with Matabike being up in question for this upcoming season.
I'd like to go back and put a bow on the usage of dime that has evolved over these same periods, because we talked about the base defense, and I'll go quickly through the nickel defense in the four periods. For 2000, nickel was only 13.4% of snaps. And I did say it earlier, he basically played four or six defensive backs a lot, and actually a fair amount of seven defensive backs in 2000, which I'll get to in a moment. Dean Pease, 46.1% nickel in 2012. So he played just about as much nickel as base. But between those two, they're playing about 94% of the snaps are with either four or five defensive backs. Okay, we go to Wink Martindale in 2019, and he played 46.1%, which is the exact same percentage of nickel as Pease did. So basically you had a migration of a ton of snaps from base into diamond quarter. And that was the really cool thing about that 2019 team. They had such positive game script, and not only that, Wink really liked to have pass rushers and defensive backs on the field. He really liked that combination. And they played 39.6% dime that year and 4.2% quarter. That's seven defensive backs, a combination at 43.8% during the regular season of dime and quarter. You mentioned Chuck Clark earlier, by the way. Fantastic piece for that 2019 team. In fact, I would say that's still the single best dime year ever by a Raven, although Hamilton has been fantastic when he's played there. He's never really played the kind of snap total that that Clark has. Clark was terrific in that dime role that year. And not only was he the Ravens dime back, he was also the signal caller. So he had the green dot after the Ravens had to recycle their linebacking unit and do different things. If I go back to 2000, that's the second best year ever by a Ravens dime. That was Corey Harris. Terrific and a lot of ways forgotten player. I don't think I've heard anyone else talk about him in all the years he's been gone. Not for any significant amount, but I talk about him still sometimes. I think he was a huge part of that defense and a part of a a long line of Aussie great acquisitions of that type. Finishing off the dime though, he played 39.6% dime. We'll stick with that. And with Zach Orr this last year, they played 24% dime. Now, some of that is game script. I'd say in a normal year, the Ravens should play between 25 and 31% dime. And that's been a kind of a typical range in the year where they've been going with dime. This was lower, and I think it was largely game script related that they didn't have. I think the Ravens, based on their personnel last year, would have liked to play more dime if they were talking about getting the optimal players. I mean, they certainly like to play more dime because it means you're third and medium and long a lot, and you're second and long a lot. Those things are good things in football in general. But also, I think they had better defensive backs than they had defensive linemen in particular last year, and that's often where that exchange is being made. So modest amount of dime under Orr this last year that I think the reduction, if I had to put it, I would expect it might have been 28%, 29% where Orr would have been had the Ravens had kind of a neutral game script year, which they obviously did. You're on mute.
Thanks, Ken. Couple things off that. Back in 2019, Wink did a fantastic job of utilizing time with several defensive backs. And I feel like we kind of met our match in the playoffs with Tennessee. Nobody wanted to tackle Derrick Henry that game. I mean, who does anyway? But we had Josh Bynes and several defensive backs. Earl Thomas had a really tough day. But that year was kind of cascaded by the Marcus Peters trade and the significant depth at defensive back. And then the lack of dime usage with Orr, I think, comes down to the lack of development you got or utilization from J.R. Alexander. He didn't pan out to what you thought he was. And then TJ Tampa still is developing as a cornerback. And as you kind of alluded to, the marriage between the rush and the coverage, and if we did not have a really good pass rush at all last year, and that's kind of what impacted the secondary there.
It definitely hurt the team. It hurt a lot of the secondary players in terms of their numbers for the year. That's for sure. I think some of them were better than their numbers would indicate. I don't think that Humphrey had a good year, not by any stretch, but I do think Wiggins had a better year than his numbers would indicate. And I think he was a lot betrayed by his pass rush. He also asked for a larger assignment in terms of covering, you know, traveling with some of the best opposing wide receivers. So that was good. Last thing I'll say about this, I do want to talk about seven defensive back usage, which Marvin Lewis did 55 times in 2000. Now, a lot of people say, well, you know, was it end of half? Was it just end of game? This kind of, it really wasn't. It was like a Ravens standard third and five defense was to put seven defensive backs on the field. They played a 31 quarter, really odd. Ray Lewis was kind of a roving pass rusher behind a three-man line. And Rob Burnett actually lined up on a slant against the center. If you want to look at some weird, weird defensive alignments, look at how Rob Burnett, he led the team in sacks that year as a defensive end, but he would line up on third down typically at a slant opposite the center. So he looks like he's either going to run past the face of the center into the guard, or he's going to run into the shoulder of the center directly. That set up some really interesting pass rush opportunities for Ray and for others coming from level two. But they had a great set of defensive backs, with the unknown names being Robert Bailey, who was a longtime journeyman, James Trapp, a longtime journeyman, one time the fastest man in the NFL, and Corey Harris, who was the primary dime back. But those three guys, unknown from that 2000 defense. Everybody can name the basic 11, but those three guys are largely forgotten. And another series needs to be done looking at that defense and demystifying it in terms of what it was. Fantastic team, fantastic defense, great players, great coaches, but it's a lot of great scheme. And looking at that is something that I want to dive into deeper in another series.
Absolutely. I appreciate the history lesson with all the players that I haven't heard about. I'm going to definitely have to do some research. I mean, I've seen the Netflix documentary from the 2000 Ravens, but definitely want to look more into that in the future. I think that a couple of teams have tried to use the sideways defensive tackle to to defend the tush push in nowadays game, but I've seen a couple of teams try it.
So that's like lining up on a slant. Yeah, there was somebody who was doing that. So there's a lot of teams line up one and one with you know effectively two nose tackles on either side of the center's shoulder, and they crash that, and then they try and beat it that way. But yeah, there was somebody who did that last year, and I'm forgetting who it was. This is not the same kind of thought. Like the slant, this is a slant on third and one versus a slant on third and five kind of thing, where you're really looking to get a pass rush advantage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe it was the Commanders. I'm not really sure, but I knew it drew several penalties back to back near the goal line. If I was mistaken,
like an offsides, not the Eagles doing something, because the Eagles lined up illegally every freaking play on that, but it was the Commanders were caught for something.
It was the opposing team that was caught for jumping.
All right. Let's see. The other things that, as this relates maybe to the 2026 Ravens. So what would you expect us to see 10% base defense again then from this team? I'm not going to make any assumptions about game script, but the Ravens, I think it's going to be a very tough year if they don't have better game script than they had last year. Let me put it that way.
For sure. I think two things that would warrant more base defense. Number one, God forbid a Hamilton injury, mm-hmm. as we kind of talked about previously. And number two is if we have a significant lead in the fourth quarter and you want to see, oh, how does Jay Higgins look? How do some of these younger guys want look in true situations? How does TJ Tampa look on the outside? I think that could be a situation where you could use more base. But I think Minter is going to implement a lot of big nickel and dime moving forward with the amount of defensive backs that we have on this roster. And with that, you can use more of the pass rush room as a room by committee moving forward. And I think that sets us up better as a team for this upcoming season.
I think that's a reasonable call on that. So Hamilton injury would be one, negative game script would be a second that might cause North that I would over under this right now at maybe 11%. And I'm being a little bit conservative, I think, to go that high as a percentage of base defense that Minter might play this year. It's not going to be anything like the, 30, 40, 50% we've seen in past years from the Ravens. It should be more almost a combination of 2025 and 2019. Whereas if they had a great game script year, if they had the kind of game script the year they had in 2019, Lamar's healthy, offense is cruising, everything, I could see 7%, 6.5%. I don't think that's out of the range of possibility, in terms of the percentage of base they might use. They'll still have some when they get themselves into negative game script situations. And there's some teams that want to use a fullback, and then you really have to deal differently with that team, or you want to deal differently with them sometimes on first down. So it will come up, but I could see even less than 9% if the Ravens have the combination of Hamilton healthy and a positive game script year.
Absolutely. Where do you see the delineation of nickel and dime in terms of percentages? Where would you put yourself?
This is good, because that gets us into the conversation of, how do the Ravens use their weak side linebacker? I think they've kind of showed their hand at the end of last year that Buchanan, he got hurt for about the last four games of last year, but he's not a guy they really want on the field and committed nickel. And that's something that's part of the 25% I don't know about Minter, is what does he really want to do with Buchanan in terms of getting him on third down? My guess is he wants Hamilton at dime, and he wants Humphrey or Martin at slot corner in those situations. And so that creates some opportunity, or Rivers for that matter, at slot corner. But if I had to guess, I'd say that's the way it'll play out, that it'll look more like a modern dime on most of those plays, which remains reduced use of, there'll be a ton of nickel, because there'll be a ton of big nickel. but I think they'll play dime in a fairly high percentage of snaps. So you'll see a migration. If you're looking at my chart and you're seeing, you know, 0 to 3 and 4, 5, 6, 7 DBs, the migration of the numbers is going to go heavily down the chart in terms of the percentages.
For sure. Do you think Minner uses Trenton Simpson similar to how McDonald used Patrick Queen as more of a?
Okay. Also in the 25%, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. He's one of the really interesting cases there, Andrew. And that I'd love to see exactly how they use him. Are they going to use him as a extra pass rusher? They used him. They didn't really line up as an edge last year. Not really. They line him up as a second edge on the outside where he was rushing the passer from outside of another player. They didn't, or even with the limitations they had at edge, at defensive line, at slot corner, all the players they were missing at times, they didn't really use him too dramatically differently. The guy they did use dramatically differently was Malik Harrison the year before. They used him as a, you know, an actual early down edge because they were shorthanded in terms of who could stop the run. They fixed that structural problem with the team now with having both Tavius and Zion Young. So I think they're more incented than ever to go with a four-man front plus Hamilton to be their method of defending the run. I think it just makes more sense.
Absolutely.
All right, my friend. Outstanding. Great talking football with you. I love package discussions or whatever, one of my favorite things to go through. And I think that the Ravens historical stuff is just fascinating to me. So I always weave that into it, but appreciate you coming on and be so prepared for this episode. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Absolutely. I'm on Reddit as ok-manufacturer-9572. It was an auto-populated name from Reddit and just went with it. And then you can also find me lurking in the YouTube comments. It's not a chance you read this.
Okay. Not a chance you read this. Yeah, Maureen saw a comment from you the other day and I said, I know who that is. That's a Reddit guy, but I'd forgotten it was you. I appreciate you you doing that. Other folks out there, thanks so much. If you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open. I'd love to hear from you. Like Andrew did, go over to the YouTube channel, give that a shot. I'm looking to increase the number of subscribers over there. I've never really done that because, you know, you don't get the same kind of a return on a YouTube subscriber. But on the other hand, you know, for visibility and whatnot, I want to do more of the 1 to 3 minute shorts. That's where those live. If you like those, go and subscribe and you'll get more of those from me, I promise. Andrew, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks again for having me, Ken. Appreciate it.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.